Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast. Here we interview successful people who are living a life filled with adventure, excitement, and fun. Learn where they've been. Explore where they are going. See what gets them out of bed in the morning. Find out what drives them. We will go through their lowest points. We will look at the opportunities and possibilities that are now presenting to them. Come on a journey of ignition. I'm your host, Leanne Blaney. For more information, go to ignitepodcast.com. Let's ignite. Marissa Price is the second of our Thousand Ripple Effect authors. She's a high school teacher, owns a tutoring business, and is a published author. She's also a mum. Before becoming a teacher, she was in the legal industry for a decade. Being an avid reader, Marissa loves escaping into a good book and has always known that there are stories inside her just waiting to be unlocked. Her first book, Vault of Verona, was released in July 2017, and the second of the trilogy, Scourge of Scotland, released in February 2018. The third is due out in 2019. Marissa's tutoring business, The Literature Factory, involves tutoring students one-on-one in their home environments. Marissa is passionate about literacy enrichment. Marissa believes she is blessed to lead this life and tries to see value in every day, in every interaction with others. Her motto is, be kind, always. Hi, Marissa. Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast.
Hi, Leanne. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so excited to share your story. So shall we get started?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. All right. Do you want to tell us a bit about where you are now? What's happening for you right now?
Okay, well, right now I'm having a chat to you, and that happens through the Ripple Effect Project, which is a World Guinness attempt that I wrote a story for. So lots of different authors from all over the world writing stories in different categories. So I wrote in the mother-daughter category. So a bit of a story about how mothers relate to their daughters and how daughters relate to their mothers. So that was lovely, and it sort of coincided with the work I was already doing as an author. So in July last year, which was when I submitted the story, I also released my first book. So that was quite daunting. I've got that stream going on. So I've done my first book of the Into the Abyss series, which is Vault of Verona. The second one, which is Scourge of Scotland, came out in February, the 5th of February this year. And then the third instalment is due next year. So I've set myself some ambitious targets, but I've managed to hit them so far, so that's pretty cool. I've got the author stream going on. I work full-time as a high school teacher, and I have a tutoring business as well. So I employ about 12 people to do tutoring across Brisbane and the surrounds with different sorts of families, different ages, different subjects, all that sort of thing. So everything's quite rewarding. I have a little family as well. I've got an 8 and 6 year old. So life is interesting. That's where I am at the moment.
I'd say interesting and very busy by the sound of it.
Very busy. Just keep swimming is my motto.
Yes. So, yeah. I like it.
Just put through it.
Yeah. What's your actual story? Where have you actually been to get to this point?
Well, I came out of high school and I went straight into university into a teaching degree, and I lasted 6 months on campus and then went, nope, it's not for me, and ended up going and getting a full-time job in the city in Brisbane working in a law firm. So I started as an office junior. I worked for a variety of different law firms and I worked my way up through different positions. So I've done pretty much everything there is to do in a law firm except for the accounts because I hate maths. But I've done everything else there is to do. One of the firms that I worked for, I worked as a law clerk because I started studying. My undergraduate degree is in criminology, so it's got a law component as well, which allowed me to do some of that law clerk work. I didn't end up pursuing law because I had my kids around the same time that I graduated from my undergrad. So I was actually 7 months pregnant with my son when I walked across the stage to get my my certificate, which was very odd when, you know, you're a lot older and you're very obviously pregnant, surrounded by all of the young people, but it was still a proud moment. And I think that was the moment when I realised that I didn't want to spend my life working in that career. I'd spent a decade doing it. I knew the good sides, I knew the dark sides, but I also know that the hours that lawyers work are intense, and you have to work very, very hard to get as far up the tree as you want to go. And it wasn't, I wasn't passionate about it. I wasn't passionate enough to pursue it to that level. Loved the criminology side of things, the counterterrorism side. So that's what I write in at the moment. So I write both fiction and nonfiction. So I write articles for a publication called The Regionalist, which is a think tank for a strategic development organisation down in Canberra. So policymakers who look at foreign policy and decisions that we make relating to immigration and asylum seekers and that sort of thing, look at the articles that are published in places like this and make their decisions based upon some of the research that we do. And so that's pretty cool. And that's really my passion. That's the area that I really love. So I teach legal studies at high school. So I can get on my soapbox quite a bit with the kids, which, you know, I think they like it, but some days I think they go, oh, stop talking. But it's, you know, something you're passionate about, that's where you end up going. And I'm really happy with where I am now. I made the decision to do my graduate diploma of teaching when a year out from my daughter starting prep. So we actually started school the same year. So when she went into prep, I went into a school for the first time working full time. So we kind of have that in common, and it means that I get school holidays with my babies. And you know, I do work very hard. I've got a lot of things going on, but it means that I have more flexibility, and I'm actually here around them with them at home. So if they're sick, I can take the time I need to be able to get them better. If, you know, they've got something on, I can rearrange a few things and I can be there, whereas I didn't have that flexibility in a previous career. So that's quite nice. And teachers work a lot. We work so hard. You know, it's a demanding profession, but it has its benefit. Its benefit is time. So being able to have that flexibility to spend with your family is the benefit of teaching. So yes, you work like a maniac for 10 weeks, but then you sort of get a little bit of downtime when you might still be doing work, but you're physically near your children, which is very different from being, you know, 50 k's away. And if someone's sick, it takes 2 hours to get to them. So it's very different. That was, I suppose, it wasn't really a lightning bolt change. It was kind of a slow one. But there was a lightning bolt moment when I graduated and went, no, that's not actually what I want to do. I don't want to pursue postgraduate law. I want to pursue postgraduate teaching and then go and work with older kids. So that was my passion.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was a lightning bolt when you were walking across that stage or not.
yes, it was. And it was looking at, you know, I suppose it wasn't so much looking at the younger people and going, I don't have as much time, but it was more a shifting of priorities. And it was going, well, my priority is not the same priority as all of the law students walking across the stage. A lot of their priority is to get a job in a good firm that can project them or propel them to the top. I don't want that. I just want a good life for my kids. So I wasn't, I suppose, prepared to sacrifice that. And there's lawyers out there who manage to do both, absolutely, but it is a very, very demanding career. And the number of, I think, I haven't even looked at it recently, but the mental health statistics for lawyers are appalling. They're shocking because they work so hard. But there were lawyers that I worked with. And so when my kids were small, before I shifted into teaching and while I was doing my graduate diploma and a couple of years before, I was working off peak. So I'd work from 12 to 8 so that I could be with them in the morning. Then I'd have to drop them to kindy and then, you know, come into work. But it meant that I didn't have to sit in the traffic for 3 hours each way, and I could spend a little bit more time with them, which was fantastic. But I saw lawyers who were still there, who were there when I got there, who'd probably been there since the night before and was still there when I left at 8 o'clock. So, and they were, you know, they slept at their desks, stuff like that. And, you know, that takes its toll.
Mm.
You know, and I didn't want that. I didn't want our whole family life to be around my career.
Yes.
Because yeah. It's a partnership. So, you know, and there's people who balance it successfully, but for me, I wouldn't have been able to balance that successfully.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you've moved on, have you had some challenges that have made you feel like throwing in the towel at all?
Oh, absolutely. not so much in the teaching sphere, because it's been like a duck to water. I love teaching. It just comes naturally. there's been some times where with, I suppose, expanding out into your own business is daunting and scary. The Literature Factory, which is my business, we grew from just me. It was just me going around tutoring kids. And then I had too many. I couldn't take on anymore. I had a queue of about 6 children. So I ended up scouting for another person to help me, got her on board. The list grew again. So we needed someone else. And then we came to the attention of another organization who helps or provides resources for children who are living in kinship caring situations. So we then had a lot of work come in from them. So we ended up going from 3 tutors to 12 tutors quite quickly. And that was a very big learning curve. And there were days when I'd be up till 1 a.m. sorting through paperwork and, you know, insurance and all that kind of stuff and figuring out what you needed. And you just think, oh, is it worth it? But it is when you get to work with these kids and you have the tutors come back and say, oh, such and such did this today. It's the first time they've done it. They finally got it. They've understood, you know, whatever it is you do in maths or, you know, so I have maths tutors who work with children because it's not my strong point, you know, or they understood, they finally comprehended what the story was telling them today. And, you know, just those little light bulb moments that I get to enjoy every day as a teacher, I then get to spread to other people and, you know, get to work with children on a different level. And part of what we do with the Literature Factory is it's not just about your grade. It's not about a letter on the page. It's also about the person as a whole. So we do a lot of pastoral care, you know, a lot of listening to, okay, well, what's going on for you right now? So you might not really be into your English assignment. Why is that? You know, what's happening at school? And we do pick up quite a lot of things that are happening that maybe kids haven't told their parents or they haven't told someone. And there's just a little glimmer of it. And by sharing that, we're able to help them to open that conversation with their parents and say, hey, I'm not having a good time. Or, you know, this is really stressing me out or this is getting me down. And helping to facilitate those conversations between the parents and the kids is really quite empowering and valuable. So there's always an up and a downside. And then there's the writer's side. So that's the side where I think you want to throw the towel in the most, because there's this imposter syndrome of I'm not good enough to be doing this. Like, what am I even doing? Why am I even trying to do this? And there's, you know, the J.K. Rowling's of the world, and I'm nowhere near that. And that's a very difficult profession to be in. And there's some incredibly supportive people and there's some not so supportive people. So if really looking after your mental health in that arena can be quite difficult and challenging. And that's the part where I suppose it's easiest to throw in the towel because you don't have to do it. It's not like, you know, if the third book doesn't come out, everyone will go, oh, well, doesn't really matter. But, you know, if I don't pay my tutors, then that does matter. So, you know, you kind of prioritize and it's that writing that you struggle with on both those levels. And, you know, and then you look at your kids sometimes and you go, and this is the kicker, but for all of it, you go, well, yeah, I work so much. Am I actually doing what I wanted to do in the first place, which was to spend more time with them? And is me working any different to what I would have been doing in the first place? But then I sort of counteract that with looking at it from the perspective of I'm actually showing my son and my daughter that you can do anything. You can create something from nothing. If you work hard enough and you believe in yourself enough, then you can achieve whatever you want to do. So there's two sides to it. There's days when you think, oh God, I'm failing as a parent and human being, and then there's other days where you go, oh, I'm winning at life. So I think everybody has those ups and downs, and you just push through it. And I suppose the best thing that's gotten me through it is having really good support networks around me and really good people that I trust to tell me their opinion, and who will give me some love when I need it and give me a kick in the butt when I need it. So I've been very lucky in that aspect.
Yeah. So what keeps you putting one foot in front of the other? Is it being a role model to your kids, or do you have a big vision?
It's the being the role model at this stage. So the last thing I want my kids to see me do is to give up. or to, you know, to walk away from something without a good reason for doing so. And there's definitely things that you walk away from. If it's not good for your family, it's not good for you, it's not helping anybody, then you walk away. But if it's because it's just too hard or it's challenging, then I think showing them that you can push through a challenge is something that's really important to actually role model, because that's where you learn it from. That's where I learned it from, was my parents. You know, they didn't, they work hard, but they always made time for us. So they had a nice balance of, you know, showing us good work ethic and showing us love. And that's what we try to do with our children as well. So at the moment, because they're so young, it is that putting one step in front of the other and going, it's okay, you know, it'll be Friday soon, it'll be Friday soon. But ultimately, there's probably a big picture lurking in the background there, but it hasn't quite unfolded yet. I'm not quite sure exactly what it's going to be.
So talking about the future, what's the most exciting thing you're looking forward to?
Oh, that's a good question. I think watching my kids grow into decent human beings, really good people. They are very individual, so watching how they're going to develop. I think being able to help increase literacy rates across the Brisbane area is something that's really important. If you look at the OECD country reports on literacy rates across different nations, we're quite low. That's been in the media quite a bit. There's different ways of testing that, and some of that testing's not infallible, but there definitely is a bit of a drop in literacy for whatever reason. There's plenty of reasons why it's happened, but being able to help with that, even in a small way, it's a little bit like the starfish story. Have you heard the starfish story?
No, tell us that one.
Okay, so the starfish story is, you know, there's all these starfish washed up on the beach, and there's this little boy walking along, and he's picking up starfish and he's throwing them back into the ocean. And an old man comes past and he says, "What are you doing? You're wasting your time. You know, there's too many for you to be able to pick up. You can't pick up all those starfish. They're going to die." And this little boy says, "Well, maybe I can't fix everything for every starfish, but I made a difference to that starfish." So that's, I suppose, where we come from, is that we're not huge. We're not making a massive dent, but we're making an impact and a difference in some way. And holding on to that and going, okay, well, let's just increase that bit by bit, yeah, is where we're at now.
Oh, I love that. That's a fantastic story, that one.
Yeah, I
love remember that for the future.
Yeah, it's great. It's good on a bad day.
Yeah. All right, let's have a change in pace and do the speed round.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
Not too speedy. We'll be okay.
Okay. All right.
What's your favourite book?
Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, nice.
Yep. Yeah.
What about a mentor figure that's helped you the most?
That would be my parents. So I couldn't pick between them. They've both taught me different things in different ways. So they mentor, like I said before, how to show unconditional love and how to work hard and your reputation. So the most important thing that you have in your life is your reputation, and it's also the most fragile thing that you'll ever have. So they taught me how to protect that and how to make sure that every interaction I have with somebody is a positive one.
Yeah, I love that. What daily ritual works best for you?
One foot in front of the other. Every day is different. So I think the only thing that really works for me is just being prepared to adjust to whatever's thrown at me and be prepared to be flexible, because it could be anything. So if you're rigid, you'll snap. If you're flexible, you'll manage to bend with it.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite food?
Yes, potatoes, in any shape or form, really. Chips. Mashed potato, baked potato, yep, anything.
Yeah, they're versatile, aren't they?
I know, right?
Do you like the country or the city?
I kind of like in between. I like being able to escape to the country and have that tranquility, but I couldn't stay there forever, and I couldn't stay in the city forever. So it's too busy and it's too bustling, and the country's too quiet. So we live quite semi-rural, so we're in the middle. So we have the ability to retreat when we want to and to go out when we want to. So that's quite nice.
Yeah. What's the biggest piece of advice to give to others to help them make change?
You're only here for a short period of time. So I think one of the most valuable things someone ever said to me was, if you don't make the change, who will? And you could, your time could be up tomorrow. So are you going to regret something you didn't do, or are you going to regret something you did do? And that's within reason. So if something that you're going to do is damaging to you or to someone else, then that's a different thing. But if it's something that you've always wanted to do but you've never had the guts, find someone who's got the guts to give you the kick up the butt that you need to get there and get going and get it sorted out, because no one else will do it but you.
Yeah, great advice. Great advice. All right, last question. If you had a time machine, what would you go back and do differently or tell your former self?
Oh, this is a great one. I would go back and give my teenage self a slap because I was a bit of a jerk to my mother. I was one of those teenagers during my teenage years. But although I'd give myself a little bit of a slap, I think it's made me a more compassionate parent and a more compassionate teacher of teenagers. So I understand where they're coming from. I get it. I've been them. And I understand the parental side as well. So that kind of adds to that ability to relate to them, I suppose. And hopefully when my daughter gets to that age, I will have done every trick she's done so she won't get away with anything. She'll still manage to find a way, I'm sure.
Yeah, they tend to, don't they?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your valuable time today, Marissa. Would you like to give us the best place to contact you, and we'll end it there?
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Leanne. So I've got a Facebook page, which is Marissa Price Author. I've got a website, which is marissapriceauthor.com. Or you can have a look at the Literature Factory online as well. So if you're in Brisbane and you want to have a sneak peek at that, then you can have a look. But the author stuff is all on the author web pages.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Leanne.
Igniters, Marissa shared how much she wants to be a role model for her kids. And part of that is running the business as well as teaching and being an author all at the same time as spending quality time with her kids. She believes that if you're passionate in something, you will end up doing it. Her starfish story is inspiring. If you want to contact Marissa, go to her Facebook page, Marissa Price Author, or website marissapriceauthor.com. If you want to learn how to mind read yourself and others to reduce conflict, miscommunication and frustration, go to my website, leanneblaney.com.